Well, good morning, everybody. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio, October 27th, 2020. And thanks for being with us today or on the archives. We archive all our shows over at ACE-ED.org, which is our equity website. And it's a great website. It's the American Home of the American Consortium for Equity in Education. Those initials are where we get ACE-ED.org, ACE-ED.org, American Consortium for Equity in Education. Great stuff over there on our website. We're the only ones focusing entirely on equity and access. We love doing it. We really care about it. The time is now. We have our wonderful magazine, which is called Equity and Access. That's over there. It's an online journal. Flip through it. Everything we do over there is free, and we want to hear educator voice. So please, if you're a K-12 educator, pre-K-12 educator, join up over there, ace-ed.org. We have all the podcasts over there, and you can follow us over on Twitter at EduTalk Radio. My name for LinkedIn, Larry Jacobs, and then Larry Jacobs and Education Talk Radio over on Facebook. We got a show today with our good friends from the National Association for Gifted Children, NAGC, NAGC.org. And we got two wonderful guests. Sally Crystal is returning. Okay, she's the Director of Innovative and Advanced Programs for the Hall County Schools out in Gainesville, down in Gainesville, Georgia, not out. And she's past president of NAGC. Hello, Sally. Welcome back. It's Larry here.
Good morning, Larry. Thanks for having me. And I have to correct you here. I am the recently retired director of Innovative and Advanced Programs in Hall County Schools. How about
that?
Wow,
retiring at 35 years old, that you must have hit the lottery. Congratulations.
Well, you are very kind, right, my friend. But I certainly will maintain my service to NAGC and our state association and do a little work at the University of Georgia.
Wow, that is just great. Say hi to the bulldog for me. Okay, we'll be talking about that in just a few seconds. Okay, and congratulations on your retirement. That's wonderful. Okay, that
Thank
really
you, Larry.
Is. They'll miss you. But it's great to be retired, especially these crazy days. It's been great to be retired.
That is true.
Yes, it is. That's Tariq, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Did I pronounce your name right, Tariq?
Yeah. Tariq.
Mm-hmm. Tariq, thank you. I could have gone that way. That would be the way I would normally do it as a Philadelphian, but I tried to be culturally responsive there. Okay, Tariq, thank you very much. Okay, Tariq Grantham, okay, is a professor in the Department of Education Psychology, also at the University of Georgia. Ooga, I might add, that was actually put here. Okay, another bulldog, I assume. All right, and he's a board member, and not he's not board, B-O-R-E-D, he's a board member, B-O-A-R-D. He's very excited and happy about all this. For, again, NAGC, the National Association of Gifted Children, for which we do a lot here with our consortium and on our podcast, et cetera. And before I go further, John reminded me, John, your executive director, that the conference is coming up. Okay, you've got a virtual conference this year, all right? And Sally, do you want to talk about that?
I'd be happy to, Larry.
Please
Thank
do.
You. Yes, like many professionals, excuse me, many professional organizations, we have figured out how to go virtual this year to keep our stakeholders safe. And our convention, we were a little bit sad because this was our year to go to Orlando, and so that's a great site for a convention.
It is.
But we are going online November 12th through the 17th. We certainly still are accepting registrations for that. And in light of the conversation we're going to have about equity and gifted education this morning, I will say that there will be a heavy emphasis on that, many sessions, many keynotes. And I think the silver lining to this online convention world that we're moving into is that anyone who registers has access to every single presentation for 6 months. And we're doing site licenses.
Great.
So a school system for a really nominal fee can get a site license. And then for 6 months have every single presentation to use to build professional learning in their own system or for individual educators. So, yes, we encourage folks to go to our website, NAGC.org, and take a look at the offerings for the convention. Many of the sessions are already listed there and the information about the site license and individual registration.
Yeah, it's so important. Again, NAGC.org, and you guys are going to be very surprised. I've heard this from several of the organizations. Everybody was lamenting, you know, that we can't do an in-person conference, which agreed are fun, the network, we see everybody, et cetera. But it also limits the amount of people who could get there because of budget constraints. Okay, there's a zillion people that want to go to Orlando, but the school districts can't afford to send them if they're from far away, et cetera, give them the time off. This way, everybody can, and I've heard from several of the associations how the attendance has tripled, okay, because now it's all virtual. So, unfortunately, in this stinking pandemic, we are finding an opportunity here to reach more people, okay, incredibly, not less. So the NAGC conference, and by the way, I'm going to say it's not just for gifted educators, okay, counselors, superintendents, and administrators, and I assume parents, right, Sally?
Absolutely, parents. We have a lot of parent offerings. Regular classroom teachers. That's one of the things that we know we must do is to reach out to those other than the small circle who are already dedicated to gifted learners. You know, we want those too, but absolutely. Counselors, special area teachers, art, music, PE even. Anyone who is interested in talent development and interested in particularly with equity concerns, we sure hope they will join us.
I hope so, too. And by the way, there will also be an exhibit hall, okay, with all the companies who are interested, which will be a nice-sized group, a lot of publishers and that sort of thing. So please go over to NAGC.org, see what's there. Tell your faculty and staff friends that they can go as well, and you're going to find out it's going to be a really great experience. It's a nice organization. Right, Tarek?
Absolutely. And, thanks, buddy. Yeah, man. And so it's really good that we have this opportunity to go virtual because, again, access is a really important opportunity for us to reach people that wouldn't normally be there.
You know, it's interesting you say that. We always talk about equity and access here. That's the name of our magazine. I didn't even think of it, that the organizations now are finally doing it themselves. They're giving everybody access to it because we were forced to do it. It's really an interesting time we live in, and I know it's going to be a great conference. You know, I want to move on, and we'll weave the conference in as we go. I'm sure you're going to be talking about equity and that kind of stuff there. But you've got – and I work a lot with NAGC and John, and Jonathan Plucker and all those people, okay? But there's a movement, and I'm going to speak to Tarek about this, okay, about equity and social justice in particular for black students in gifted education, okay? Mm-hmm. I have to ask, Tarek, are you an African-American gentleman? I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. So, okay, which gives you a different perspective than me, the white guy from Philly and now Maine, okay? And I'm curious – okay, it does. All right. I'm curious. All right. Has there been a something must have brought this about? Everybody's concerned about equity, but, you know, I don't want it to become a buzzword. Okay. That's the one thing we're trying to fight here with our consortium. All right. But there must be something historically in the last few years that has come up that has shown that black kids are not getting treated equally among the gifted. Is there something going on? Tell me about this. Tarek Grantham, everybody.
Absolutely.
Professor, the Bulldog Man. Over at UGA.
Yeah. Go Dogs.
Bulldogs,
Go
Dogs.
Well, equity has been an important part of what NAGC has strived to achieve for since its origin. But, however, recently there's been increasing attention around equity, and not just the way in which equity that we look at equity from the underrepresentation standpoint. Some of the causes and some of the issues that have surfaced in this year with the passing of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, it just caused a national interest and attention around what was going on with racism. And so our field understood and embraced that inequity is a function of systemic racism. And this is something that the organizational leaders decided that we want to take this on head on, not just traditional ways of thinking about equity in terms of how we identify students or how we serve students. You know, our former colleague at the University of Georgia used to talk about the four A's: attitude, access, assessment, and accommodation. These are the four sort of strands, if you will, to think about and how to approach equity. But within that, attitude was one of the most significant and most difficult areas to address. And what we found is that attitudes were being impacted by systemic racism, not by necessarily malicious people. There are a lot of goodwill educators and people who are doing good work and actually are striving for equity. But oftentimes I call it the three C's. You know, they're three C's, and it informs inequity. And that's sometimes our complicitness, our complacency, and carelessness. So these things can impact our attitude, and it ultimately impacts the degree to which Black students are underrepresented. And so the pain that I experienced, that board members experienced, that members of NAGC experienced regarding what was happening in the nation just resonated with us. And we thought about how our students and their lives were being impacted because we have not effectively done enough to confront the systemic racism and to promote anti-racism. And so this is a part of how it came to be, this agenda in the boldness of it and the extent to which we were not going to sit by and be bystanders to what we know and what we have experienced in our field as a part of the legacy of promoting attitudes that undermine how people view Black students and their intelligence, the value of their lives. So that's a little bit about how this has come to be.
Yeah, and the social justice part was the part that I wasn't really understanding very well, but I do know that was well said, my friend. Okay, and there is, without question, and everybody's guilty of it, and this is everybody. Everybody's built somehow with implicit bias. I don't know how this happens, okay, but it does somehow happen. I was talking about that last week on a consortium for AASA. All right, the Superintendent's Association, we were talking about that. When does implicit bias begin? We don't start like that. Okay, we're blank slates when we start. And I don't know how it happens. It's just generational and all that sort of thing. And the social justice, to me, means we're not giving the Black kids a square shot. Okay, and there's plenty of Black kids who have gifted education. And I always use this example, which just blows my mind as I think about it. Some 50 years ago, I went to Overbrook High School in Philly, which was back then about 80% African-American kids. All right, and we were all together in home. This is a huge school. It's 5,000 kids in the school. And amazing, isn't it? Four shifts. One started at 7:30. The last one started at 10:20. So I got out. I was early shift. I got out at 1:30, and some kids got out at 4:30. All right. So the whole school was only there for a while, but we were all together in homeroom. Okay. I'm Jacobs. I was with the Jacksons. Okay. We were all together in the homeroom, Black kids, white kids, etc. Okay. And then the minute the bell rang, we wouldn't see the Black kids again, except for maybe two or three of them. Okay, because we went to academic classes. Okay, quote, I'm doing air quotes, academic classes. I don't even know where they went. Okay, and you're telling me that 98% of the 80% of the kids in the school didn't deserve to go to college? Hello? Okay, so give me a break. Okay, and this, I'm talking years and years ago. Hopefully things have changed. But my point is there was some attitude out there, and it just doesn't make sense. But according to somebody's estimates, and Sally, you can do this one if you want, or Tarek, you can continue. Okay, what's the percentage of gifted African-American kids? And if I can throw in there Latino kids, what's the percentage of minority kids that we've been missing, okay, in gifted education? Does anybody know that? Does anybody do research on that, Sally or Tarek? Oh,
yeah.
Well, we do, but I'm going to turn that over to Tarek. But the short answer, Larry, is yes, we do take a look at that. The Office for Civil Rights, in fact, recently has updated their figures to give us an estimate of the talented youngsters that we are overlooking and failing to develop their gifts. Tarek, aren't there some new numbers from OCR?
Absolutely. From 17 and 18, that was just reported actually within, I believe, this month. So that data we haven't really crunched. But I want to just call your listeners' attention to a report that was done by, you know, our colleagues at Purdue looking at system failure in gifted education and the idea of missing, how many we're missing. So you have underrepresentation, but I'm glad that you mentioned the missing part, because in their report, they talk about missingness. And it's a breakdown by race of the missing students that are typically or come largely underrepresented. And so this report is national. It can be found on the website if you just type in system failure in gifted education. And so to your question, when thinking about how many we're missing, there, for example, there's 63 to 74% of Black youth are missing in gifted education programs. So where there is underrepresentation, some of it is more egregious than others. And it's really important to pay attention, because when you have these inequities and the disparate impact that can be found, some of it is not by chance, but it's by design. And some of it can be considered discriminatory and illegal. And so
It absolutely is. Yeah.
And this is where systemic racism can play a part. Now, it doesn't mean that because there's this underrepresentation or we see this missingness among African Americans at this level in some schools. Now, not all schools, because some schools are doing very well. But when we find this, we have to pay attention, because we can become complicit in a system that is perpetuating discriminatory policies and practices. And that's a very important point, because the missingness among Blacks, which is the largest group that is being missed among Latinos, Latinx individuals, is 53 to 66%, according to the system failure report. And
that's
so these are the two largest groups. So I'm glad that you asked it in that way, because we have to move beyond a colorblind society or colorblind gifted education or colorblind educational practices. We have to look and see, just like what you described in your experience, where all of one group of kids were moving in one direction and another. We have to see that. You know, we can't continue to say, I don't see color or I don't see these differences. No, it's very visible. So,
of course it's visible.
I'm glad, you know, you call attention to missing this, because that
information
is available.
But I did notice it back then. I got to tell you, I'm going to plead the guilty here. I did notice it that much back then as I do thinking back on it. Okay.
And,
because,
you know,
the world has changed and I have changed. Yeah, go ahead. Sal, were you going to say something?
And with that, and that's a part of the problem.
Yeah,
that's a part of the problem, is that we're even teaching generationally children and students not to see. And so a part of one of NAGC's initiatives is to see me. You know, we're emphasizing that we want educators to see students, see differences, not from the perspective, not just from the perspective of deficit, but see students so you can begin to identify strengths and have an attitude that understands how systems are working, especially systems that perpetuate these inequities. And this can start early. I'll give an example that really troubled me. I get phone calls or email messages, you know, often, and I just got one, speaking of children and youth and not seeing, I just got one from an educator, and they were saying on the first day of school, they're virtual, on the first day of school, they had a chat. In the chat, you had one student, you know, students have an opportunity to chat and discuss whatever the topic was.
Yeah.
And one student texts the other student in the chat talking about the topic, "You stupid N-word." And this is an insensitivity that exists even today. Now, if children don't, and they recognize differences, but what have they been taught? What have they learned that perpetuate this idea that it's okay to call this student this? And this is in the gifted program. So, you know, this was in the gifted program. This wasn't just in the regular program, or in the special ed program, or in the other programs.
Yeah.
So I'm bringing this up because, like you just mentioned, you didn't know. I think we're complicit in allowing some of these attitudes and these behaviors and what society may be intentionally or unintentionally promoting, because there's certain attitudes that cause students not to want to participate. If this kid is the only Black kid in the class and he's getting a public and chat room kind of discourse on the first day, what is that doing to him and how he feels about his participation and how he's valued in the class? Now, he's a stupid N-word. So this just happened, and these kinds of examples.
Was he the only black kid in the class? I didn't hear that. Was he the only black kid in the class?
No, he wasn't the only black in the class. But when you're you're in a chat room, you do feel isolated when the majority are.
Yeah.
So I wanted to bring up these examples just because this also contributes to why some students don't want to participate. Now, with that being said, there are many students who are very successful, who are thriving, who are developing the cultural competence to be successful, who many educators are preparing to achieve and to reach their full potential. And for them, we want to applaud them and we celebrate them. They show up at our conventions, at our conferences. They come to our trainings. And that's a very important part of what we do and what we celebrate. As a matter of fact, we have a Javits Fraser teacher program where we invite individuals, we invite teachers to come to the conference and they receive training. These are individuals in Title I schools. Oftentimes they don't have the support or they haven't had the experience with training and gifted education.
Yeah.
And so we
want
to support them because sometimes in these struggling schools where underrepresentation is vast, they may not have what they need and they may not be equipped. So, you know,
not only under-resourced, but under-resourced.
Because not all schools are equipped the same.
You know, Tarek, and I don't mean thank you. Sally, did you want to say something before? Then I want to get back to something Tarek said. Go ahead, Sally.
Yeah, real quickly, because I do think it ties in. You go back to your high school experience, Larry. I'm sure those were good teachers. I don't think anyone was
intentionally. I'll say it again. It's implicit bias. You don't even know you're doing it. It's just there.
It is.
I don't mean to make an excuse. It was just there. Now we're sort of realizing it. But back then, you didn't know. It was goofy.
But then, okay, so now fast forward, and you understand just the jarring impact that here we were in 2020, and black men and black women were being murdered, and we're still seeing these numbers. Try Philadelphia last night. As hard as we have worked, and you still have a young child calling a classmate the N-word.
Yeah.
And you just talked about that under-resourced. So here we are. We feel like we've worked on this, and then it's just jarring that we still have so far to go. Recent statistics from OCR tell us that a fourth of the schools that have the highest concentration of Hispanic and black students don't even offer Algebra 2. And a third of them don't offer chemistry. And black and Hispanic students are far more likely to attend schools where 40% of the teachers do not meet state licensure certification. So I have no doubt, we have no doubt, there are brilliant children sitting in those classrooms, youngsters from underrepresented groups. But if they don't have curriculum that is rich enough and rigorous enough for them to shine, then it that lack of recognition and development starts way before we give anyone the test to access gifted programs. It's much more systemic than that.
And by the way, I must say, considering how well I did in chemistry and algebra, had my school not offered them, I would have said thank you. Okay, I'm terrible. Right.
We can look back now, though, and wonder, in some ways, that was de facto segregation when the black kids went off the shop.
And what you're talking about, again, is this implicit. It's enough to make you crazy. It's just nothing. Yeah. When you start to realize it and just talk about these things, it's beyond belief. My wife and I constantly when you hear about these things, you go, can you believe this? It's just unbelievable. I have a question for Tarek, though. Tarek, you said something before, and I wrote it down. You said that there is you use the words by design, that it's not accidental, quote, that some of this is by design. And that's a strong phrasing. okay, mm-hmm. to use. That's and I mean this, and I mean this. I'm going to an explanation, please. You know, it's very, and rightly so, I might add, very accusatory. So when you said by design, what did you mean by that? Are people really trying to on purpose, okay, not allow black kids into gifted programs or whatever? That's very strong.
Well,
and I want to hear what you have, the explanation. Go ahead.
Here's a very simple example of by design that many schools and administrators may become complicit with, but may not realize the impact and the disparate impact is causing. So in the field of education, of gifted education, we advocate for multiple criteria to identify students for gifted education. So many schools rely heavily on a standardized IQ test or mental ability test or a standardized achievement test. And these tests have been found for some groups to not be the best measure to demonstrate or to replicate. So to allow a policy for and to heavily weight one measure such as this that has mm-hmm. historically created disparate impact or outcomes mm-hmm. not favorable for black students. And I would even say for
great
second language students or for English, then to allow that becomes by design. And we know that best practices says you should have multiple criteria and multiple measures. And so that's just one way. Now, some may do it intentionally, but some educators may do this intentionally. For example, they may not. This is the meanness of it, where they're trying to exclude. Like we're only going to use the mental ability test because we want the truly gifted kids, and that's based upon an old paradigm where IQ was deemed to be the standard, the gold standard for how you identify or who gifted kids are, which is old, which does have roots in racist ideology and was intended to exclude. But it is a measure that can be an indicator. But when individuals only use a measure such as that, then it becomes by design that you're ignoring best practices and you're allowing perhaps disparate impact or these discrepancies to exist when you find that. So that's an example.
Are there still I talk to a lot of school districts all over the country, okay? And when I talk to people, the superintendents, et cetera, they recognize this stuff, and they're really trying to make changes. And that's what I want to use the rest of the show for. Are we making the changes that have to be done? Sally, I'll ask you this. You can start this. How are we making the changes? How are we recognizing this and making the changes, the positive changes that will make a difference for all kids, okay? All the gifted kids, all the potential out there, black kids particularly, Latino kids are next, okay, et cetera. How are we doing it?
And thank you, Larry. Let's do focus on solutions because there are some, and folks are trying, and we just need to do so much more and support. Let's start with that access piece that we've talked about. Attitudes, that's a big one. We have to continue to work with attitudes. But access starts, as I said before, not with the nomination for the gifted program, but it begins with high-quality general education for all children, so that everyone has the opportunity to develop those gifts and to show them in the classroom. And when they show them, they need to be in the classroom with a trained teacher, not just content expertise, but as we've talked about before, this CME sort of training where those teachers have been trained to recognize the behaviors that suggest extraordinary potential in those children, including when it's demonstrated in ways that have been influenced by opportunity, language, culture, and not to overlook it because of some of those things that a less sensitive teacher won't recognize. Even with assessment, certainly giving up our over-reliance on standardized test scores and giving different ways for children to demonstrate it. We talk about universal screening so that we're not reliant on teachers or parents to nominate children for possible gifted program placement, but so that we develop ways to take a look at every single student through that proficiency lens and using local norms. You know, Larry, I was state director of gifted ed in Georgia for 10 years and had the great honor of working with educators all over the state. And I tell the story that there was one elementary school that literally abutted the Emory University campus. Most of the kids' parents were associated with Emory University and the medical school there. The building average on the national achievement test, the Iowa test of basic skills, was above the 90th percentile. Wow. And then I would go down in rural South Georgia, where, and that school probably had well over half of their kids meeting state identification criteria for gifted program placement, the Emory University located school. I'd go down to rural South Georgia. A school of the same size might have one, two, three children who have met the state standards. I maintain that in that poor rural school, still the top performing students need more than the excellent core curriculum that we want all children to have. So giftedness is relative, and I think that using some local norms would help us begin to get away from thinking about who is in the program and instead thinking about who is demonstrating such achievement or potential for achievement that they need more than that excellent core curriculum that we must have for all children. So those are some of the things we do. And making programs more accommodating to the variety of gifts. You know, AP English Lit is the most frequently taught advanced placement program in the country. What if we had an AP Multicultural Lit where black and brown students saw scholarly work, moving work that was written by people who look more like them? So it's a complex problem that must be addressed with continuing to work on attitudes, improving access to even consideration for special program placement, better assessment, and programs that are as diverse as the gifted youngsters who need those types of services.
And what you just said, Sal, reminded me, and Tarek and Sally, do you guys know another Georgia resident? Do you know my buddy Goldie Muhammad down there? Tarek, do you know her?
I don't.
I can't say that I do.
That's going to change. I'm going to introduce you guys, okay? Goldie is famous. She's famous, okay? She's a professor down at Georgia State, okay? But she's an author. She's an absolute expert on historical black literacy and its effect on education today, okay? Kind of what you just said, Sal.
You got to
know Goldie, okay? She's a power. She's my buddy. She's a power to be reckoned with. I got that. You just be prepared. She's great. Okay, you'll love her. All right. Goldie, Goldy, because her name is longer than that. Goldie, Goldy Muhammad. Okay, she's wonderful. And by the way, I got to say something. I'll introduce you guys by email. And I got to say something. I love that "see me" phrase. That's a great phrasing. Okay, and I don't know if that's the name of your program, but it ought to be.
Yeah.
Okay.
It is
really, really good. I want to ask the professor of educational psychology. That would be Dr. Grantham there. Okay. Tarek, let me ask you something. When I was, I went to college 10,000 years ago. We walked around in togas. Okay. But Ed Psych, we had one course, and I have to tell you, it was absolutely ridiculous back then. All right. Things have changed, but. As an Ed Psych professor, are enough future teachers, are they talking about, and we can go into other areas too, but we're talking about gifted today, all right? Are they being trained to understand that there may be gifted kids in their class? What are you as an Ed Psych professor doing to help the typical future teacher understand about gifted kids? And I don't mean to lay that on you, but you know what I'm going with.
Well,
it's like in general, yeah. It's not 100% on your shoulders, Atlas.
Go ahead. Well, I'll say that we're not doing enough because most teacher education programs, if they get some you know, training and gifted education. It might be a session or a half session or a talk. It's so much embedded within the teacher preparation program that oftentimes gifted education gets, you know, the last leg of the journey. So I would just say generally not enough. But we're fortunate at the University of Georgia to have a graduate program in gifted and creative education. And we also have the Torrance Center for Creativity and Talent Development, where there is a hub and there is a critical mass of faculty and scholars and individuals interested in the education of students with gifts and talents. And so we become in a lot of ways a magnet to provide training with local schools, but also within other teacher education programs. And we point our students to the National Association for Gifted Children.
Nice.
In my class on multicultural gifted and talented education, we spend time talking about, you know, what giftedness means, but also how to recognize prejudice and oppressive institutional structures that can marginalize students with gifts and talents from culturally different backgrounds. And this ties into what's happening at the national level, where NAGC is trying to offer a perspective and a framework for schools to change policies, to change practices, and to change minds regarding how we view students from underrepresented and culturally different backgrounds. So, you know, to your question about teacher preparation programs, we're not doing enough. However, we're proud that we have an opportunity at our institution to focus, and we have a strand. We have several classes that focus on diversity and equity, but within our graduate program, we weave these concepts and infuse diversity, equity, and inclusion within all of our courses. And so, you know, we're happy and proud about what the NAGC, what the National Association for Gifted Children
Should
is
be.
Doing,
Should
because
be.
Part of the heritage at UGA is to lead in this area of equity. As a matter of fact, Sally Cassell was a part of some of the early work that helped change state policy. I talked about the criteria earlier. She and Dr. Frazier and others helped to lead the state in changing from an old paradigm to multiple criteria to a broader paradigm. And so we're talking about that in our courses and our training and how teachers are endorsed. And a part of that allows for a broader conversation with education preparation leaders. But also it's sowing the seed to say, look, we want you to be a part of the field because this is what's happening in our classes. This is what we're about. This is a legacy of what has happened in the state. And the National Association for Gifted Children is now trying to encourage us to take the next step. We're not going to be complacent with some of the progress that was made. We're going to take the next step.
Good.
And we're going to
Good.
Be prepared. We're going to partner and we're going to be proactive to move it forward. So that's a
and
little
speaking.
Bit about what's happening at Georgia and, you know, how our heritage and where we're headed and how NAGC plays a part.
Yeah. And talk to your fellow professors, all those education professors around the country. They got to make sure they recognize what you just said. Speaking of partnering, and I work a lot with John Sagoda, Jonathan Plucker. You guys know those two, your executive director and your president, they're good friends of ours. But I want to invite you two, and you talk about partnering. We'd love to partner up, and I can talk to the great Sagoda about this. All right. But our consortium for equity, okay, really, really would love to partner even more than we do with you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, by getting your articles out there, et cetera. We have a lot of members. We work with the whole industry, et cetera. And go check it out. Please, guys, join with us, and I'm going to be in touch with you about it. It's over at ace-ed.org. Okay, but
Excellent.
We're on the same wavelength here, and we can work together. We want to. Okay, we want to partner up with you guys. All right,
and I can say that because I am
the president of the consortium. You know, we try. All right. This is great. We got to go. Tarek, it's great to meet you. Sally, it's great to have you back here again. Oh, retired
one. Good to talk to you again, Larry.
Yeah. What are you going to do? Now you're going to lay in a. I know what you're going to do the rest of the day. You're going to get a swing between two mimosa trees in Georgia and sip sweet tea while eating bonbons. Am I correct? That's what you're doing today?
I sure wish that were that way, but my husband has already begun to roll his eyes and say, I think you've done it again with this fake retirement. I tried to retire about 6 or 7 years ago, and it lasted 6 weeks.
Never mind.
But,
yeah, no fun.
But
no
I'm
fun.
Trying to have a little bit better balance now. Today is not the afternoon for bonbons, but I'm going to try to get that on my calendar.
Do it. Do it. Bonbons. By the way, nobody even knows what a bonbon is. It's candy. It's like from 1940. I'm showing my age here, a bonbon. All right. But at any rate, it's good. So enjoy the sweet thing. Tarek, I'll be in touch, okay? And stay
all
safe
right.
down there, by the way, guys. Okay? It's the whole world's nuts with the pandemic. Just be safe,
yeah.
Okay?
Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you both. Thanks. Have a great day. I'll be in touch.
Have a great day.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Tarek Grantham, both from Georgia, okay? Tarek Grantham is a professor of ed psych down at UGA, the Go Dogs, all right, University of Georgia, and he's a board member of the NAGC. And by the way, check out their convention, okay, over at NAGC.org. And Sally Crystal has been with us before, okay? You know all about her, but she's retired now, all right? But she's the past president of NAGC. All right, and just great folks. I'm going to introduce them to my buddy Goldie, who is beyond belief. All right, so we're going to archive this show over at ace-ed.org like we always do. Thanks so much for listening. Please join with us. Enjoy our magazine over there, etc. Everything's free, ace-ed.org. I'm Larry Jacobs. Thanks for listening.